newspaper because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
It is Wednesday, October 16th for Patreon subscribers, and for the rest of yous, it is October 17th, a Thursday. Big, decent weekend in college football, and we got a guest on our show later on when we start talking about some of the West Coast matchups. Shane Larson, the Game Time Guru, came on, and we appreciate him coming on, so we'll get to that in a little bit, but definitely check him out if you have a second. I would recommend it. I listen to his podcast, so that should be reason enough to check it out, right? Yeah. But before we get into college football, I want to talk about a couple things that are kind of recent news. And the first one, and I'm going to go ahead and call it, this is completely untrue. It's completely clickbait. It's a rumor that's not true. But regardless of the fact, the sentiment behind it is real. And so I even tweeted about it. They said there's a rumor from a source in the gambling industry that some gambler has bet large amounts at other books on three games that this guy named Cleet Blakeman, who's an NFL official, that this guy has bet on three big games that Cleet Blakeman's crew has officiated. And that's obviously was the Packers-Lions huge. I mean, there's an uproar from the NFL officiating right now. And I've never seen before. And I think the scary part is with all the legalization of sports gambling that's going on countrywide, is why now is it so horrific? And it's way too coincidental to just let go, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it with sports gambling, that's going to bring in a whole other aspect, because you're talking about financial impact on people's lives when it comes to officiating and impacting games.
Yeah, and you know what? Years back, there was a huge NBA official scandal as far as gambling and corruption, and that's the fear, right? It's not that it couldn't have gone on before or didn't go on before. It's that as you make it more widespread and more common that gambling is in all these different states, the more accessible that is and the more powerful these people that bet a lot of money become, and now they're everywhere. They're not just in Vegas.
And it'll make it harder for them to track and find because it's so common.
Absolutely. But, I mean, I think it just goes back to accountability in refereeing, and they got to get people out. And then, you know what, investigate them. But the officiating in all of football is at times comical. And I already gave my kind of pecking order in college football of officials and how good they are, and it's sad to see the highest level, the highest paid officials in the world are making these mistakes.
Have you heard about the ref in the sky?
Yeah,
have you heard about that at all?
Yes, having a guy in the booth that is a seventh referee.
And well, yeah, he can make calls from the booth.
The XFL is doing it. The XFL just instituted it. They have a 20-second clock on any flag. They can buzz down and say, "Oh, nope, not a flag," or "Yep, it's a flag." And it's like every flag is reviewed instantly. 20 seconds, move on.
I like that.
So
yeah, it definitely.
I was listening to a couple different people about this, and the thing is, because you know, just like you said, why is it so widespread and being talked about now? And you know, people are going to come up with conspiracy theories about gambling or whatever, and maybe there's validity in that, maybe there's not. I don't know. But what I can tell you is what is true is that a lot of the big time NFL referees that were some of the best, they got plucked by these networks to be their, you know, NFL referee correspondent, and it's because ESPN can pay them a lot better than the NFL's paying these refs.
So can the NFL, but they don't.
Yeah, I mean, I guess ESPN does pay them a lot better. Yes.
Right.
But so
those refs don't make just chump change.
No. But I'm saying ESPN, Mike Pereira makes a lot more than, you know, whatever, Blackman, the referee crew. But so some of the best referees are now working in the media.
Yeah.
And now you got these new referees who, you know, I read a study, and it was like 5 years ago, the average length that an NFL referee had been doing referee as a job was like 18 and a half years.
Yeah, I was going to say probably a long time.
And then this year, the average length that a referee has been a referee before getting to the NFL is 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's there's a lot of factors that go into it, obviously, but and everybody said it needs to be addressed. It's impacting and it's ruining the sport.
Well, and at some point, across the NCAA and the NFL, they both need to address it and pay people more, invest in you know, referee school or whatever yeah. you do. They gotta put the money up is what it is. If you're gonna ruin a $1 billion industry because somebody is inadvertently throwing flags or not throwing flags or just poor at their job, you have to fix it. So I wanted to talk about it, not only gambling but also refereeships. Refereehood, because it's comical. I mean, all the work that goes in by these players, by these coaches, all the love and money spent by these fans for some clown in a zebra suit to throw a flag or not throw a flag and disrupt the whole game is like, come on, man, we got to do better than that.
Well, and even that, after they go and review the penalty and they still get it wrong. Well, that's the worst when it happens.
That happens a lot with, and especially now with pass interference because it's reviewable. Yeah. Yeah. But a lot of penalties you can't review, and that's another thing people bring up. But if every penalty is reviewable, it's just that's not the answer. That's just going to ruin everything. How about just the refs become better at their job and we don't have to review everything?
Certainly, but it'll be interesting to see the XFL and how this 20-second quick review goes. And who knows? I mean, that might not even add much time. I mean, you have a 40-second play clock or a 25-second play clock, either or. And so a quick 20-second review, unless somebody's going no huddle, you'll be able to buzz down. And I can't imagine that it can't take a guy with the screen to run it back a couple times. He can't make that buzz in 8 seconds. Like, it shouldn't take that long.
Yeah, even one of the NFL correspondents, the former refs, was asked that question. He said, you know, when I was first asked about it, I was against it because I didn't want it to impact the job on the field. And he goes, but after this first 6 weeks of this NFL season, I absolutely think it's something they should do.
And it needs to happen. But that's enough talking about refs. This is not a referee podcast. I just had to address it. Now, I do want to talk about so Phil Steele. I'm sure people know who Phil Steele is. He puts out an unbelievable preseason preview magazine, probably the best in the country. And he's an analytic guy, really studies football, but he put out a couple analytics that I wanted to mention just because they're different, and I was intrigued. And the first one he put out was, which I've never seen, it was a cool analytic ranking system, I guess, that I think is notable and really intelligent. So basically how he did it was, if you beat an FBS team, you get credit for all of their wins. So if you beat Cincinnati and Cincinnati's 5-1, you get 5. From them,
okay,
right, and not FCS teams, but then and then it's just a summation of all the wins of your opponents that you beat, and so that nationally, here's what that looks like. Ohio State has, how do you say it? Ohio State has beaten teams with 20 wins.
Yeah, with the most.
So Ohio State has beaten teams with 20 wins. Wisconsin 17 at 2. Auburn 3 at 15. And then LSU, Bama, Penn State, Boise, and Oregon at 4 with 12 opponent wins. Ninth tie Clemson, Florida, Washington, Arizona State, Notre Dame at 11. 14th, Michigan, SMU, Minnesota, Louisville at 10.
So even that analytic, Ohio State's number one.
Yeah, and they have beaten teams with the most wins. Yeah, I mean, take that for what it's worth. I'm not saying they're the best. I am saying they're the best team in the country, but not because of that stat. Yeah,
that stat alone is.
But it's crazy to think. Like, who have they played? Who have they played? Well, Wisconsin's played teams that have won 17 games. How many has Bama? Oh, 12? Okay, so they've played more teams with more wins.
This is an analytic that really doesn't help the SEC because those FCF games don't matter.
Yeah, they don't matter. And
but it's true, they don't matter anyways.
Nor should they, because that's not a game. That's a scrimmage. The other thing Phil Steele put out, he did a similar ranking, which was simply offensive and defensive yards and points with strength of opponents factored in. So if you get 1 yard against Alabama, that means a lot more than if you get 1 yard against South Alabama, right? And that ranking goes like this. Ohio State 1, Wisconsin 2, Alabama 3, Oklahoma 4, LSU 5, Clemson 6, Oregon 7, Penn State 8, Auburn 9, Utah 10. And I was looking at it like, well, when I watch the film, that's not far off. I think LSU's maybe an Alabama could, not even Alabama. I think LSU could jump. Definitely Oklahoma. But it's a good analytic to look at. I like it, and it's gives you some kind of insight into the national landscape without any other way, right? Without a full portrait painted, when you're only halfway done with the portrait, it gives you a decent way to look at it. And this is going to be probably our most analytic show that we've had, because I think there's a lot of things that people aren't talking about that they should be. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the nice thing about analytics and like these kind of stats is they don't tell you who's the best team is, But when you start stacking the all these analytics together and you find out there's a common number one, number two amongst all these different analytics, it gives you a pretty good idea who the better teams are.
Yeah, or who has played the best, right? I mean, you know, any obviously a la Georgia, anybody can lose next week. Mm-hmm. We're just, all your analytics do is tell you who has done the best in the past, right? Mm-hmm. This season so far. But
well, I think the midpoint of the season right about now-ish is a good time to start talking about the stats and analytics like this instead of preseason.
Oh, preseason's a joke, but yeah, definitely the halfway point. I think first quarter is a good kind of first check, and then halfway through is where every week you got to look at it and see what's going on. But before we get into the analytics and the national landscape that is college football, I wanted to bring up a point that a really good friend of mine that's a college football coach brought up, and it has to do with the hypocrisy that is the NFL. Because what we've seen in a gross fashion is some of these rules the NCAA has put in place, quote unquote, for player safety, that have severely damaged the game, in my opinion, because they're getting called rampantly by just idiot officials. A lot like the blindside block that is now, in theory and in intention, is a great rule. But now we're using it like if a guy pushes a guy that wasn't looking, it's like blindside block. Like what? And so here's what I had this conversation on, I think it was Monday, with this, he's a defensive football coach. And the question is this: if player safety is all that matters, right? If that's all they're concerned about, and it's certainly not scoring more points to interest fans and make money, it's player safety, right? That's what Absolutely. It is. Then why is a cut block legal? Have you ever, if you watch Navy or even any team in pass pro, this technique is literally, I am going to drive my shoulder through your kneecap and try to, like coaches say, tear his ACL out.
Yeah.
Like that's the technique of a cut block.
That's how you teach it.
I've always hated cut blocks.
So why, if player safety is all that matters, why is cut blocking legal? And I'll tell you why. Because it's an offensive technique.
Mm-hmm. And they can score more points.
And cutting a linebacker or cutting a D-end helps the offense score points. Score points drives numbers. Numbers drives revenue. NCAA, you're full of shit. If you cared about player safety, you wouldn't throw a flag because Baron Browning pushes a guy from the side that wasn't looking. You'd throw a flag when a running back chops the D-end at his kneecaps and blows his ACL. That's player safety. It's a joke. The NCAA is a joke, which we all know that. But it's like, don't stop it with player safety. I could give you five things that need to go from the game to help player safety before a blindside block rule. That's outrageous. So I had to bring that up because I had that conversation. I was like, that is a great topic that no one talks about. Why are we allowed to chop guys' knees? Why? If a D lineman falls into a quarterback's leg, he gets a flag.
Yeah.
But I'm a running back and I'm allowed to just throw my helmet and shoulder pads through a guy's ACL? That's ridiculous. So I just get a little upset about it because it's just the hypocrisy is outrageous. But I wanted to mention it. But let's talk about the national landscape of college football this week. So there's only three top 25 matchups. Michigan Penn State is one, which we're going to preview on our other show, Menace to the Midwest. So make sure you check that out. But I have my game of the week that is not a top 25 matchup, but I think it is upset alert. Upset alert in Louisville, Kentucky this weekend.
Oh, Papa John Stadium?
Pop, I don't know if that's still what it is.
I think it is.
Maybe it's Yum.
The Yum Center.
He got booted. Brands. Papa John got booted.
Oh yeah, he did. He definitely.
Yeah, he's
did
gone. It's definitely not Papa John
saying some not so good things.
Right. Yeah. So here's upset alert, and here's why. And so all this is going to be predicated on Mikhail Cunningham if he plays or not.
Yeah.
He's gotten dinged the last two games, but he took over pretty much week two after the Notre Dame debacle at Louisville, and then he played about midway through the second game. He became the guy. And here's what he is. I watched the Louisville Notre Dame game, and then I went. That was a different team than is today. Mm-hmm. They have a new quarterback. They've improved quite a bit, and so I went back and watched it. And then I wanted to look at the analytics. And Mikhail Cunningham, right now as a starting quarterback, has the best QBR in America when he's kept clean. So here's the list: Mikhail Cunningham 1, Tua, Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, in that order. I don't know much, but if I'm Louisville, that's the company that I want my quarterback to keep.
Yeah,
like, oh, no doubt.
Like where are his stats at? Oh, they're with all of the elite Heisman candidates.
All four Heisman candidates. Yeah,
yeah, the Heisman candidates and our guy. Yeah, and here's the other thing that is so I think this is an upset alert, and people, no one's going to agree with me, and I don't care. I think they got a real chance here, and here's why. People aren't talking about Clemson's defense. They have 64 missed tackles on the year, almost double everyone else, every other undefeated national, you know, nationally relevant team. 64 missed tackles. Their defense is not playing well.
Now, that's averaging over 10 a game, so, you know, what have we said?
Yeah, double-digit tackles. And I'm starting to rethink it as I did my research the seasons thus far. And there's a lot of teams. Well, I mean, I guess I really looked at all the undefeated teams, so that would make sense. But they're the one undefeated team with double-digit missed tackles, so that's scary. That's scary. Here's the other thing that I think is very relevant is Clemson has the 65th best pass rush in America. And Louisville's in the top 50 when it comes to pass pro. So if they can give their quarterback time, I just told you, he's the best quarterback in the country when kept clean, when given time. So if Brent Venables does not just employ every pressure package in the world at Louisville, they could lose this game because they don't pressure the quarterback very well. And I know everyone wants to talk about Trevor Lawrence, T. Higgins, and blah, 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 blah. I get it. But this is not the same Clemson team. This defense is not the same Clemson defense.
Well, have you watched their past games? I mean, it's very possible that any team could go out there and beat them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm calling it this week.
Just how they're playing.
Just get ready for it. I'm calling it. And if they get blown out, I didn't say it. We'll delete the episode. Now,
it's too bad it's not a night game there in Louisville. Night games with the all black. Those are cool.
It
is a noon kickoff.
Yeah, but you know what? That sometimes, in my experience, bodes well for the underdog. Because a noon kickoff at Louisville, you're Clemson, you got big-ass rings on your finger when you arrive at the hotel. Those are the games where you come out flat and you play lackluster and you get punched in the mouth and it's like, oh, you Clemsoned.
That's a good point.
Now, what Clemson does have that I don't want to just I'm not going to dog Clemson. I'm calling Clemson what they are. They have the best receiver in college football right now. T. Higgins leads Power 5 skill players with 4.58 yards per route run. And so that stat, yards per route run, that is a strict indicator of production, right? Of all the routes you run, how many yards per route, right? Mm-hmm. And he leads the Power 5 skill in that category. They also are doing a good job in pass pro, Clemson is. Now, the guy that I was so high on early in the year has really leveled off. It's Travis Etienne. He's a 57th graded running back in the country, 21st in the NCAA in 7 yards a carry. But what was shocking to me, because after I watched that the first big game, I was like, wow, that's the most explosive back in the country.
He is so explosive.
And I even said it. But he's 86th in the country in explosive rushing yards.
Jeez.
It's unbelievable.
I think everyone's just waiting for them to just do something. Like, come on, be explosive, Clemson. This is what you do. It's about time.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
But this T. Higgins is a freak of nature. I mean, he has 33 targets, 0 drops. He actually leads the country in catch rate downfield. So over 20-yard passes, he catches 80% of them, which is, I mean, outrageous.
That's awesome.
And so that's number one in the country. It's kind of been a, hey, Trevor, throw it up to T kind of mentality. And so it'll be interesting to see. I'm calling the upset, though. I think if it's not an upset, it's going to expose Clemson for less than the number two team in the country or whatever they're ranked now.
Again?
Yeah, again.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm interested to see because Trevor Lawrence continues to not impress me this year.
Oh.
And, you know, he makes some throws now. Don't get me wrong. Like, he had one throw against Texas A&M that just no human should be able to make the throw that he made, but he just isn't consistent, and I want to see him be consistent.
Well, everyone's waiting for him to be consistent. Yeah,
True.
That's a fact. But I'm calling it. I think this is a game that Clemson is on high alert. This is a game that could upset their entire season because God knows if they have one loss, they are out.
Done.
There will be 7 other one-loss teams that get in before Clemson with the resume they're going to have.
Well, there's no other team that they can rebuild on top of. Like,
none.
Virginia that just lost? I don't know.
Right. So I just wanted to address that. That's my upset alert. Be ready for it. And like I said, if it doesn't happen, we'll delete the episode. I never said that. but just wanted to preview that. So we're going to jump into kind of a couple West Coast games and then want to talk about some national analytics, some national landscape evaluation from that I went through and spent a lot of time on. So we'll be right back after this. Support for Menace to Society comes from Manscaped, who is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Halloween is right around the corner, and you don't want to spook someone with your scary bush. You might be Chewbacca, Bigfoot, or a hairy bear, but it's what's under the costume that really matters.
Oh, man, I have a funny story about that. I was a couple years ago, well, actually probably about 6-7 years ago, I wish I would have had these products they sent us because I wore one of those morph suits for Halloween, and I was a little too ungroomed, I think, and it was kind of noticeable.
Oh, you could see it.
Yeah, it was. I had to put some shorts on.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. But don't be that hairy guy. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 2.0. Inside the Perfect Package, you'll find their electric trimmer called the Lawnmower 2.0. This waterproof and skin-safe technology will protect you from nicking your pumpkins. You can also create less mess by trimming in the shower. And of course, let's not forget about the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? The Perfect Package 2.0 also includes anti-chafing performance boxer briefs that keep your package cool and smelling fresh all day. For on-the-go freshness, you'll love the Crop Reviver Ball Toner Spray. It's time to get clean and mean with this Perfect Package 2.0. Fortunately, right now, you're getting 20% off with free shipping using our code MENACE, M-E-N-A-C-E, at manscaped.com. Stay sexy this Halloween. Your balls will thank you. Again, get 20% off of free shipping with the code MENACE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code MENACE. All right, thank you. I appreciate you checking that out. And I would advise Manscaped products are great products. You should check them out. I mean, even just get a little trial pack or something like that and see if you like them because they're phenomenal. And it's not just like ball shavers. Like there's some legit things that I think people like. I mean, I know they sent us a care package. We talked about it. But anyways, there's two huge games on the West Coast. And that's why we're going to, in a minute here, talk to Shane Larson, kind of our unofficial West Coast, correspondent.
Yeah. Guru.
The guru, the game time guru. We're going to talk to him in a minute. But a big matchup here is number 13, Utah,
they're at home.
They're at home against number 17, Arizona State, which is a big Pac-12 matchup.
Especially in the South.
Oh, huge.
Yeah.
Huge. And so it's going to be both teams are 5-1, a huge Pac-12 South matchup. And on paper, it certainly looks like Utah has the advantage. I mean, Utah's defense is one of the better defenses in the country, and Arizona State has been very lackluster on offense. So it's going to be a defensive battle for sure if Arizona State's defense steps up.
Did you see any of the highlights of Arizona State, the Arizona State-Washington State game?
Yeah,
because it wasn't on over here, but did you see Brandon Ayuk?
Yeah.
He had, what, 3 touchdowns, 160 yards, something? I don't know.
He's really good.
He is a game changer. So if he can get the ball, who knows?
When I look at some of the stats, Utah has a legit defense, you know, only giving up about 13 points a game right now.
Well, they're top 10. They're a top 10
really
defense.
Good defense for sure.
They're a top 10 scoring defense, a top 10 defense against the run, a top 10 overall defense. Their pass defense is just okay. Pass efficiency defense is top 25. So they have a legit defense out west. Mm-hmm. And Arizona State has not shown an efficient offense.
So I agree with that.
This looks like a defensive battle. And like I said, I don't want to spend a ton of time on it because I think Utah is relevant. I don't think Arizona State is relevant nationally.
Okay.
Naturally, I don't.
Well, they have a freshman quarterback who is just coming into his own.
I know. Okay.
Just wait. Jaden Daniels.
You sound like an Auburn fan.
Yeah, exactly. I got you. All right, Bo Nix.
Okay.
He's better than Bo Nix.
He's going to come into his own and just give us a chance. But that's going to be a fun game to watch. Definitely a fun game to see. I will say this. Arizona State is the best defense in the country at diffusing explosive runs.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I mean, they've only given up 10 explosive runs on the year. And so it's going to be a good matchup. It's probably going to be a defensive battle. And I think Utah has the edge on defense, but it's definitely going to be fun to watch. And it's definitely going to be relevant. And if Utah can pull out a big win, that's going to vaunt them back into a conversation of, you know, obviously a Pac-12 champion conversation, but also a national conversation if they can end it as a one loss team and kind of go down the stretch and beat the rest of their schedule. The other game in the West Coast is Oregon at Washington, which going into Washington should provide a decent test for Oregon. And I want to preview it just for a quick second, but then I want to bring in our West Coast correspondent, Shane Larson, to really give us a perspective on the West Coast football. Because out I don't know how everyone else is, but out east here, we don't hear a lot about them, see a lot about them. I mean, most of the games are late at night, and I've watched more than I ever have this year, but it's not a relevant region because of time zones.
Well, time zones and the fact that there's no Pac-12 12 undefeated teams.
Yeah, there's nobody nationally relevant today. I mean, there could be at the end of the year. I mean, Oregon's one loss at the end of the year. If they're a one-loss team, they could be. But this Oregon-Washington game is going to be interesting. I know Oregon's leading receiver, their tight end, Jacob Breeland's out for the season now. And they already lost their other tight end, Cam McCormick, for the year previously. So it's good. They definitely it's not a healthy Oregon rolling into town, but they have the uberly hyped Justin Herbert coming into Washington to put on a show. But the cool thing is, I think this is Oregon's best defense they've had since 2014, because they had a decent, pretty good defense the year that we played them in the national championship game. But this is, you're talking about a top 10 defense pretty much statistically across the board.
Yeah, when you look at it, Washington comes in with the second best scoring offense in the Pac-12, going up against Oregon's best scoring defense in the Pac-12. And so that's the matchup I think you look at. And, if Oregon should be able to move the ball on Washington, but can Oregon's defense slow down this Washington offense?
Yeah, and the moral of the story is, I think you look at the analytics and compare, categories, compare analytics like I do in my little formula. And Washington is a 24-place underdog on offense compared to Oregon's defense. But the really scary part is on critical downs, like third down, red zone, all those critical downs, they're 71 spots lower than Oregon's defense. And that's where you make your money. I mean, that's the money downs. Mm-hmm. And that's scary. Now, Washington has an advantage on when they're on defense on critical downs. It's kind of a 10-spot spike, I guess, over Oregon. So it'll be interesting to see, but it should be a complete shutdown by Oregon's defense. But I really want to, now I want to jump into our Shane Larson and get his opinion on it. So we're going to go live in Boise with Shane Larson. All right, well, we are now joined on Menace to Society with the Game Time Guru. Quick story about the Game Time Guru. It was the first podcast I ever went on. I don't know, Shane, I don't even know if you knew that.
I did not know that, actually, so that's news to me. That's awesome, man. I'm glad I was able to be the first.
Well, once we started our podcast, I really was like, you know what, this is a cool platform, and I didn't know much about it. And then you had reached out to have me on. And so, like anything, I'm not just going to go on a random podcast. And I listened to an episode, previous episode, and I was like, this is really good. I'll go on this for sure. And that was the first one I ever did. But so for those of you that don't know, Shane Larson, he's the Game Time Guru. He is now on the Unscripted Podcast Network, I guess is what you call it. And he has a phenomenal podcast, really a great insight. And he is one of the many Buckeyes out West, right, Shane?
Yeah, man. I call myself the Boise Buckeye. Born and raised in Boise, but a huge Buckeye fan. So yeah, I'm the Boise Buckeye. Got quite a few of them out here, man, surprisingly.
Oh, you know what's funny is in recruiting, I used to travel the country, and there wasn't a place I went that there weren't Buckeyes, like in a school or in the airport or somewhere. It's just it's unbelievable. It's definitely an international brand, and it's coast to coast. They're everywhere. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. I definitely, I think this is going to be really good for the national audience, because I don't know, obviously you're out West, and out here in the Midwest and even the Southeast, there's not a lot of talk about West Coast football, because there's not really a nationally relevant team. Obviously no Power 5 undefeated team left. So we really wanted to get your perspective on just what's the talk out West. Like what are people talking about as far as the national landscape when you are out on the West Coast?
I mean, we're talking about the Boise State Broncos. I know you mentioned, Zach, like there's no undefeated Power Fives, but don't be cutting our Broncos short here, dude. We're, I know we're group of five, but we're still undefeated, and we're rolling into BYU this weekend. So you got to give us some credit there, right?
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. It's the Bluefield Boise Broncos are never to be forgotten. That is a great point. So they got BYU. How, tell me this. Is Boise real? Is that a real deal? Like, I know they're undefeated, but you think this is the Boise of old where they were going to go upset an Oklahoma or someone like that at the end of the year?
Man, that's a good question, Zach. I think what we're seeing here with Boise, the fact that they're undefeated is unbelievable to us Boise State fans, because they haven't put together a full game yet. They have a championship defense. Their defense is absolutely phenomenal. Even with our former defensive coordinator heading over to Oregon this season, we thought we were going to have a drop-off, but the defense is absolutely incredible. So they have that. But we're still trying to find the rhythm on offense. And then with our freshman Hank Bachmeyer going down this last game, taking a shot to the hip, it's going to be interesting going into Provo, or heading down to Provo, just 6 miles south of here, or sorry, 6 hours south of here. But we'll see what happens with our backup quarterback coming in. I do believe that if this team can get past BYU, we have a couple tough games at the end of the season, but if we can get our offense rolling in a good rhythm, we were looking pretty good against Hawaii this last week. We looked really good against Hawaii, actually, this last week. I think that they they might be, I don't know if they're at the level of like the 2000 and I guess the 2010, 2011 team, the 2009, 2010 team that beat TCU and some others. But I do believe, you know, and in 2006 we beat Oklahoma, but we weren't even that talented back then. I do believe we're getting there. I don't know if we're quite there yet, though.
I got you. Well, it'll be exciting to watch. Everybody loves a Cinderella, and Boise has been that, I don't know, countless times. So it'll be really cool to see or to watch and watch it all play out and see if they can. The best part about it is when they get to the end of the season, they go play a big time opponent in a bowl game, and you're like, all right, let's see what they're talking about. Let's see what this is, how real this is. It's always exciting. But I really wanted to get your insight because there's a huge game this week, and no one out east is talking about it really. But Oregon-Washington is a huge, huge matchup for the Pac-12 for sure. And it's also a huge matchup. And from what I understand, I certainly don't know anything about it, but it's somewhat of a rivalry now, right?
Yeah, man. And this kind of goes back to your original question, and I kind of went off on a rant with Boise State, but it kind of goes back to your question about, like, what do we think back out here on the west side of the state about football and stuff? And I think the Pac-12 doesn't get enough credit, right? Like, I'm not a Pac-12 homer by any means, but I don't think it gets enough credit. This Oregon-Washington game is going to be, it's going to be exciting. People kind of hate on the Pac-12 mainly because of, like, you know, you got the Washington game. They got blown out by Alabama a couple of years back when they finally made the playoff. And, you know, to their defense, I mean, that was the exact same year that Ohio State got housed by Clemson, right? So, yeah, right. You know that, like, it was a tough season. So to judge the Pac-12 based on a couple of their bowl games, it's kind of tough. What I love about the Pac-12, Zach, is the fact that it's pretty competitive from top to bottom. I mean, I'm not saying every single team's an elite team, but any team can compete with any team on any given night in that conference. Whereas the SEC, you'll see they're really top-heavy. I'm sorry to upset any SEC fans, but I'm telling you right now, you're top-heavy. The bottom of your conference is trash. The ACC is trash, yeah. Outside of Clemson. So, like, at least the Pac-12 has some competitive games throughout the entire conference, which is pretty fun to watch. That's why I love the football.
Preseason, my preview show, I said they might be the second or third best conference in the country, and people like got all bent out of shape. And it's like, I get it. There might not be that top tier playoff contender, but top to bottom, they're far better than the Big 12 or the ACC, and then Big 10 and SEC. It's a conversation. I mean, they certainly don't have Alabama or Ohio State, but top to bottom, it's a solid conference.
Oh yeah, man. They're absolutely a good conference top to bottom. And people want to also, I mean, we as sports fans, we're quick to jump to the big thing. And so everyone's like, well, they lost to Auburn and to what I think is a very average quarterback in Bo Nix at this particular point. That's my own opinion. But, I mean, that game, if you go back and actually watch the film, Oregon beat Auburn all the way through the game. Like, yeah. They had the last pass that Nix threw. Yeah. He had some balls to throw that ball, but that was just a good, like, I mean, it was a good play. But I mean, Oregon actually was controlling that game. So to say, oh well, they lost to Auburn, who now we're seeing is not a top tier SEC team quite yet, it's kind of frustrating because, yeah, every team, they competed. That's what I'm gonna say. It's Oregon competed in that game, and they should have probably won that game. They had some mental lapses, and that's unfortunate. But as far as Oregon and Washington is concerned, we're looking at this game. Here's my thing. Oregon's defense is starting to come around. Oregon's offense is flowing. There's a reason they opened up as favorites on the road. I mean, I think the spread was at 3.5. So it was a 3.5-point spread. It dropped. I think it shifted to 2.5, and then now it's anywhere between 2.5 and 3. Like, they know it's going to be within a field goal, or at least Vegas is thinking it's going to be. Here's the thing. Washington, for those who didn't pay attention to the games earlier on in this season, a lot of people just, they're stat watchers. I hate stat watchers, Zach. Can't stand it. Oh, but unfortunately, that's just where we're at. Like, stat watchers bug me. They just see the box score and they don't know what actually happened in the game. Well, Washington, they lost to Cal early on in the season, and that game was garbage because the game didn't start till like 10 p.m. Pacific time because of a weather delay, which is 1 a.m. Eastern. So by the time the actual game got over, you guys over on the East Coast were waking up. And so it was a crap game, and they only lost by one. And at that point, like, Cal actually was on a roll at the beginning of the season before their quarterback got hurt. So there's a lot of, you know, variables in that game. So that was just one of those, what I call a weird game. Then going into the discussion of how the Pac-12 is competitive, well, Stanford, they're just one of those teams. They're like a headache, man. And sometimes you just don't bring your Tylenol to the game. Stanford can cause headaches, and they match up with different teams. And they met a team, and Stanford was ready to play. And they beat them. They beat them pretty well. I mean, I think it was a 10-point game, but I mean, Stanford controlled the whole game. So Washington has two losses. The thing being said, they're going to be open. They're at home, and Eason is playing pretty well, throwing 66% right now. he's playing pretty well. It's not like he's blowing any numbers out of the water, but he's playing consistent and an efficient style of football. He's going to be opening up at home. They've got homecoming. It's going to be big, and they're underdogs. I don't see Chris Peterson. Yes, this is my Boise State bias a little bit because he was our old coach. Yeah. I don't see him. I just don't see him losing at home. And so I think this is going to be huge in the Pac-12. I see why people are picking Oregon. They've got the better quarterback. They're playing more consistent football. But Washington is a very tough team. It's going to be their toughest opponent yet. I think Washington actually pulls the upset in regards to Vegas' eyes. I think Washington wins at home.
That's awesome. Well, that definitely would shake up the Pac-12 for sure. And it's a bizarre thing. Like I've only watched probably two games of Oregon and one game of Washington this year. And obviously the big Oregon game, Oregon Auburn was the first one. And I'm wildly unimpressed with Justin Herbert, but I'm overly impressed with that defense. I mean, to have the number two pass efficiency defense in the country, I mean, that's just not always been Oregon's mantra. It's always been that kind of high scoring, prolific offense and just a good defense, almost like Big 12-ish. And it's bizarre to see this trend shift. And I'm not to take anything from Justin Herbert. He's a good player. I just don't think he's the top quarterback in the draft type of player, if you follow me.
I'm right there with you. I mean, I love his game. And I think he's – I don't know if it's considered regression or just people kind of have film on him now. And so that's just kind of what – he's going to have to overcome some of those things now that people understand how to play against him. But, yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. Shout out to Boise State again, though, because Andy Avalos is over there controlling the defense at Oregon this season. He left Boise State last year for a better gig in Oregon, and you can kind of see what he's putting together. Their defense has stepped up, and that's why I think that's why Vegas is putting them up as you know, three-point favorites or within a field goal on the road, because of the fact that they can hold. Like, Washington hasn't shown anything completely explosive in a couple of their games, and so I'm sure Vegas is expecting Oregon to kind of hold them. I've seen a lot of score predictions, Zach, saying, you know, Washington's only putting up 13 to 16 points in that game. I mean, considering, I don't know what the weather is going to be. I haven't checked that. But when I look at Washington and Oregon, I would expect Washington to be in the 20 point range, yeah, at least 20. And so if people are picking them to have 13 points or less, like score two touchdowns or less, that's a big testament to Oregon's defense.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be fun to watch. I'm excited to watch it. I love watching West Coast games just because most people out here east, they don't. And it gives you a perspective into the entire landscape of college football. So last question about this. Best team out west, who is it? Go.
Oh, are we going Power Five or are we going everyone?
No, best football team. If every team in the country got to play each other, who's the best one?
On the West Coast, I'm taking Boise State. They're the most consistent. And I'm not just saying that because I'm an alumni of Boise. I do think that Boise State's the most consistent. But I will say this. Oregon's playing the best out of the Pac-12 that I've seen them play in a long time. So you're going to take Boise as the best team in the West. And I know a lot of people are going to say that's ridiculous for a group of five. Look who they played, this and that. I do think they have the best defense. But I'm going to pick Oregon out of the West Coast.
I love that. I love that. And you know what? It's not like that hasn't been the case ever. I mean, that Boise team could very well be. And come bowl season, we might find that out. So last question for you, and then we'll wrap it up. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but tell me what the conversation is as far as the national landscape, you know, college football playoff. And I know you're far more tied in than just a fan on the West Coast, so you have more knowledge. But what is the chatter about out west as far as SEC, so, you know, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State? Like, what is the talk out west about the college football playoff landscape?
You know, Zach, I think we kind of have a similar opinion out here as a whole. I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for the majority. Like, the SEC bias is out of control. I think everybody kind of understands that, and I think that the common consensus across the country is the SEC bias is ridiculous. I mean, there's a huge difference in having the best team in America and then having the best conference in America. Just because you have one of the top teams in America does not mean your conference is the best conference. The SEC is not the best conference in the country at all. But it's ridiculous that they get. I mean, I know you guys have talked about it. Everyone's talked about it. Texas A&M being ranked in the top 25 after their two losses last week, just so Alabama could have a top 25 win. It's ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
So we see it out here. It's infuriating, actually, because we see who they're playing. We see the FCS schools that a lot of these teams get to play throughout the duration of their season. And the preseason rankings favor a lot of the SEC schools, and it's absolutely ridiculous. And so that's why we should get rid of preseason rankings, period. That being said, I mean, I obviously have a massive respect for Ohio State, but I think as a whole out here on the West, any of the big schools, I'm talking any of the big time conferences, Big Ten, the ACC, they have respect for Clemson, have respect for like Ohio State and some others, but they have a common, you know, I guess the same feelings for these big schools as they do for the SEC. I think the SEC is a little more extreme as far as the bias from the media, but I think the West Coast feels a little left out. I mean, they're behind everybody, quote unquote, when it comes to time. So, I mean, everyone feels like they're behind everybody in football and this and this and this. But I think a lot of people are, they're a little bit bummed out that they don't get the same recognition as everybody else does. And then you see teams like Clemson who are getting the benefit of the doubt, even though their conference is trash. They haven't put together a complete game more than once this season. And they always seem to be put on top. Same with Alabama. And so all these conferences get all the benefit of the doubt. Whereas, you know, over here in the West, you got the Pac-12 beating up on each other. They're still good teams, but they don't get the benefit of the doubt. So I think there's a little bit of frustration, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, it's what you said. It's just not visible to the East Coast because of game times and things like that. And then the reality is USC is not the USC of Reggie Bush days, and Oregon is not the Marcus Mariota Oregon anymore. And so it's just the country's probably waiting for that nationally relevant, like that dominant Pete Carroll team to come back to the West to make it, I guess, nationally relevant at the upper echelon.
Totally. I think you're spot on. I think once they start having a team that is in the works there, and I think the last time we saw that was Washington just a few years ago. Obviously, they got blown out, like we said. And I think that's kind of like put a black mark on the West Coast side of things. And so a lot of people are kind of like looking at them like, okay, well, the last time y'all had an undefeated team that was really good, quote unquote, you guys got blown out. Like, it's almost let's wait till you guys have something else. So
it's almost the Notre Dame effect. You know, it's like, nah, you guys were undefeated and got blown out once, so you must be garbage.
Sometimes I think, Zach, that's a fair point. I mean, I see some schools doing that, but I think to discredit the entire conference as a whole is kind of rough. But, I mean, you understand that as a former coach and everything. Like, you can kind of see that. Like, you can't discredit the whole conference based on a few games and this and that. But at the same time, we got to give respect where it's due. I love my Buckeyes, an elite team. Clemson, obviously, their conference sucks, but they're an elite team. Alabama, as much as I hate them, and I hate Saban, they are an amazing program. Like, that entire program is phenomenal. So you got to give credit where it's due. But for these conferences as a whole to be able to get more credit than anyone else and whatnot, it's kind of absurd, at least for the other ones. I mean, Big 12, SEC, ACC, they're top heavy. I mean, the Big Ten's a little bit more stretched out as far as their depth. But, like, the Pac-12's pretty deep, man. So I think a lot of the West Coast guys, we're just waiting for that credit.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Well, tell me this, Shane, so all of our listeners can hear. Where can they find your podcast?
I appreciate that. Yeah, so if anybody wants to listen to the Game Time Guru, it's on any podcast platform. You can find me on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, wherever you guys listen to your podcast at. It's the Game Time Guru. Follow me on Twitter, at the Game Time Guru. Zach mentioned earlier that you know, I'm working with the Unscripted Ohio Podcast Network, and so I'm kind of doing a show for them called Gridiron Game Time. But if you guys are, you know, Buckeye fans, you probably might understand, you know, Unscripted Ohio is an awesome network. We got a lot of good shows over there. So you can find me there as well. But the Game Time Guru is my show. Just any podcast platform, type it in. And yeah, I'd love any subscribers. And if you want to follow me on Twitter and interact, I'm always down to talk.
Absolutely. Well, to give you a little pump up here, it's probably one, I think it's one of four podcasts that I listen to. So I'd highly recommend it to anyone. It's a really good listen. Shane knows his stuff, and he's really got a talent for audio media. And so definitely check it out, Shane. I appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you, Zach. Thanks for the time, man.
All right, for sure. Well, we appreciate Shane coming on and definitely taking his time out. And like I said, I would advise you to check that out, his podcast. It's a really good listen. He's really talented. But just before I want to jump into the national landscape and talk some analytics, talk about some evaluation on some of these nationally relevant teams. But before we do, I want to, we'll be right back after this. Guys, remember the days where you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get the extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Reminds me of a funny story back when I was coaching. I'm not going to say where. I'm not going to say who, obviously. But I dated a girl who was a team doctor. She was one of the doctors. And when another staff member found out that I was dating her, he immediately was like, oh, my God, can she give me Viagra? Tell her to prescribe me Viagra. I was like, oh, my gosh, man. That's an odd thing for me to ask her to do. But it was really funny. And I wish I knew about Blue Chew. I would have just recommended that to him. If you could benefit from extra function and more confidence where it counts, Blue Chew is the fast and easy way to enhance your performance. Most guys talk a good game, but Blue Chew helps you follow through. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your doctor or straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when using our special promo code MENACE. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, it's BlueChew, BlueChew.com. Promo code MENACE to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. All right, welcome back. Thanks for taking a second to listen to that. So I want to talk about this national landscape and kind of go conference by conference and talk about anyone that could be nationally relevant and just kind of talk about some analytics that I see. And I'm going to go quickly through the teams that really I think are out on the outside looking in but could potentially win the conference. The first team that we would talk about, starting with the Big Ten, is Ohio State, but I'm going to save that. They lead the country in tackling defense, only 34 missed tackles, and they have the top graded defense in the country. But we are doing an in-depth analysis of Ohio State on our other show, Menace to the Midwest. So make sure you check that out, because I want to make sure I don't want to have any oversight and not talk about Ohio State, but we're going to talk about them for a good 30 minutes on the other show. So you can really get an idea of how Ohio State's playing right now on that show. The other three teams, I guess you could say Michigan as an outside chance, but they're playing decent defense, horrible offense. The two teams that I think are could become nationally relevant, especially with a win over Ohio State, are Penn State and Wisconsin. And Penn State have the second ranked graded defense in America and the number one rushing average defense in America. So they're playing defense in Penn State right now with anyone. Their defense can go toe-to-toe with anybody's defense nationally. And it's going to be really interesting to see as they take on Michigan this week, and then they're going to have Ohio State coming down the road. It's going to be interesting to see what type of problems they poise in a matchup like Ohio State. They also are 41 missed tackles. It's third amongst the undefeated teams, and they're pass proing really well. And I think Penn State is, for whatever reason, the least talked about, most dangerous undefeated team to disrupting the national landscape. The other team's Wisconsin in the Big Ten that I think is wildly underrated and under discussed, and they statistically have the best defense in the country. We talked about it last show, number one or number two, and damn near every statistic, analytic, you name it. What's not talked about is, you know, they have Jonathan Taylor, probably one of the best running backs in the country. They are tied for first in the country as far as minimally missed tackles, 34, them and Ohio State. So they're the best tackling defense in the country. And then they have a quarterback, Jack Cohn, who has the seventh highest adjusted completion percentage in America. So you have what more are you looking for when you talk about a championship caliber team? An elite defense, a Heisman candidate running back, and a quarterback that's going to efficiently throw the ball.
That's all you need at Wisconsin, is a game managing quarterback that, you know, completes when it needs to.
Yeah, and he's doing better than game management right now. Yeah. He's not, I mean, he's certainly not in the conversation with Joe Burrow or Tua or Justin Fields, but he is efficiently doing what he has to do with the football. And I'm telling you, watch out for Wisconsin. The next conference, and probably the first conference to most people, but not to me, the SEC. And in my opinion, there's really two teams in the SEC. I've said it a number of times, and that is LSU and Alabama. Mm-hmm. And LSU, it's tough. It's tough to say who has the edge. LSU definitely has bigger wins at this point, but Alabama's playing lights out.
And Alabama is Alabama.
And Alabama is Alabama.
And they haven't had a test. They just keep blowing people out. So
absolutely. And here, people want to dissect LSU's defense, but LSU's defense is not as bad as people want to make them out to be. I mean, statistically, they're struggling in some areas, but and I think the main reason for that is they have 48 missed tackles, which is very high at this point in the season, and they're preseason. How about this? This is my problem with the sports media. The AP put out their midseason All-American team, and on it was Grant Delpit, the safety from LSU. Grant Delpit has more missed tackles than any other defensive player on a undefeated, nationally relevant team. He has 10 missed tackles alone this year. That's outrageous. So yeah, call him an All-American, AP. Who voted on that? That Heather Dinich? I'm sure she voted for him. She probably made him the player of the year on defense. Now, so that they also have the ninth graded defense in college football. So some of their stats aren't great, but you watch the film, it's a good defense. What no one's talking about, or at least not up in the Midwest, I'm sure they are in the SEC network, is they have probably the best corner in the country right now, the way he's playing, Derek Singley Jr. He's unbelievable. He's leading the country in pass disruptions. He has 3 interceptions, 10 PBUs. He has been lights out. And no one up here has talked about it. I mean, their secondary is playing really well. Obviously, we just talked about their tackling issues. So their defense is not as bad as people make it out to be. They want to make it out to be like this prolific offense with this horrible defense. It's not. Not when you watch the film. They have some issues they need to get corrected. Now, what they do have, they have the best quarterback in the country right now playing quarterback. He's rated the best, graded the best, everything the best. All stats are the best. But here's what they had that I didn't know they had preseason, and no one really did. They have 2 wide receivers in the top 6 wide receivers in America grade-wise in Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. Justin Jefferson is 2nd in Power 5 conferences with 4.39 yards per route run, just behind T. Higgins we talked about earlier. And then you take those two and you add in Terrence Marshall Jr., who's a top 25 wide receiver nationally. You're talking about 3 top 25 receivers nationally. And to give it to perspective for Ohio State fans, the highest graded receiver at Ohio State is Ben Victor at number 24. LSU has 3 receivers in the top 25.
Yeah, I remember when we previewed them in the offseason, we mentioned their wide receivers because it was kind of an unknown. And I briefly remember mentioning those two, Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, because that's the first time they've had 2 wide receivers that could be playmakers since they had Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry.
But the difference is now you're seeing it.
Like yeah, now they actually are.
They're using them. Yeah. And they even asked Jarvis, I think, after this last game, like, what would it have been like if you could have played in this LSU offense? And he was like, oh my God, it would have been amazing. but the clear-cut leader in the SEC right now is Alabama, obviously. And they are not disappointing on that. They haven't had a signature win against a big-time opponent yet. They haven't really played anyone yet, but they're doing it in dominant fashion. Mm-hmm. 38 missed tackles, the second least amongst undefeated teams. So they're tackling well. They're protecting Tua. They're 5th in the country in O-line pass pro. So that they have 94% of the time that they pass the ball, Tua is kept clean. And I'm going to tell you right now, if they can play defense the way they're playing it, keep Tua clean – with the skill they have at receiver, whoa. Think about this now. You talk about yards after the catch. That's like how dynamic are your receivers, right? They have 3 in the top 10 in college football. 3 out of the top 10 play at Alabama. Henry Ruggs, 15 yards after the catch. Devontae Smith, 12 yards after the catch. Jaylen Waddle, 12 yards after the catch. Those 3, but now mind you, their best receiver isn't even on that list.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. You're missing somebody.
Their top 20, he's a top 20 receiver grade-wise, is Jerry Jeudy. They have 4 receivers that are bona fide studs and a quarterback that's a Heisman candidate.
Yeah, I saw somebody pose the question of, you know, who's the best wide receiver core in the country, and somebody was discounting Alabama, and I was like, I don't see anybody that has a wide receiver core comparable.
It's not even close. Alabama's 1. I thought Clemson would have been 2. They're not. T. Higgins is having a great year. The rest of the group has really underperformed the whole year. I think Ohio State is it's not even close to there yet. I mean, they're 4 deep, but you would say that's the best group in the Midwest, but it's certainly, yeah, you can't contend with Alabama. It's not even close. But and the other thing, Alabama has some issues on defense. They have obviously some they're missing a couple linebackers that lost for the season, a couple D linemen. There's 4 true freshmen playing a lot.
Yeah.
And but they're still the 3rd graded defense in college football. So it's going to be an awesome matchup. I can't wait to preview that game. The one thing they don't have that they always have had is a great running back. I mean, Najee Harris is a good player. Don't get me wrong, but 57th in the country at 6.1 yards per carry with that offensive line. Come on, that's he has 1 touchdown on the season and a season long run of 25 yards.
Wow,
that's a season long 25 yards. He's a you know, good pound it back. He's a good little running back.
Yeah. Only one touchdown.
But that's not Alabama. I mean, Alabama, you think about the running backs that have come from there, the Derrick Henrys, Mark Ingrams.
And if they had that running back that we'd be talking about, this is the best team in the college football, absolutely, not even close. But they don't have a Jonathan Taylor, Travis Etienne, J.K. Dobbins, DeAndre Swift. They don't have that. But it's those are the two teams, and I'm going to tell you why those are the two teams. We watched Georgia lose to South Carolina, so they already have been exposed as perhaps a pretender, right? And then people want to give Florida a lot of credit for kind of going toe-to-toe with LSU. Here's why Florida is a pretender. So we've been talking missed tackles, and that's my biggest stat in college football is missed tackles. Florida has 76. Whew. That's 105th in America. So they don't tackle well on defense. They're 99th in the country in pass pro with a backup quarterback that needs protected. I mean, this is not a real team. And they might give Georgia a game because I don't think Georgia's real either. But whichever of those two teams goes to the SEC championship game, it's not going to be a game. It's not. Not the way they're playing right now. So that's kind of my insight into the SEC. Now you talk about the Big 12. So here's a stat for you that blew my mind. And this is a kudos to Alex Grinch and what he's done with that defense. Because Oklahoma has a very average defense. So an average defense, for sure. Right now they have 54 missed tackles, which is the second most amongst undefeated teams, right? So you would say that's not a good defense. Here's the problem. Last year, Oklahoma had 165 missed tackles on the year. I mean, that's 12 a game. That is horrific. So there's been dramatic improvement on defense. Now, are they a good defense? Absolutely not. But that offense is so good that if they just have an average defense, this might be a team to be reckoned with. They have two of the top 10 elusive running backs in the country. Elusive means the number of missed tackles that they cause, right, or avoided tackles. Ramondre Stevenson and Kennedy Brooks are fifth and ninth, respectively, in the country in making people miss and breaking tackles. Shit, this Ramondre Stevenson is averaging 10.2 yards per carry every time he touches the ball. 75% of his rushing yards come off of explosive runs. Now you're talking about two explosive, nationally elite running backs. And now you put them in the backfield with Jalen Hurts? That is a rushing attack. I mean, that's outrageous. And here's what that type of run game does. That type of run game will afford Jalen Hurts the ability to throw the ball efficiently, a la Tim Tebow at Florida. Not the best thrower in the country, but because the run game was so dynamic, the play-action pass yielded wide-ass open receivers. And that's what you're seeing. That's when CeeDee Lamb gets to go off.
Yeah, and CeeDee Lamb went off.
And is going off.
Yeah.
Now, what Oklahoma doesn't do well is they don't pass pro well. They're 77th in the country in O-line pass pro efficiency. But here's the reason why, and this is an absurd stat that I've heard no one talking about. Jalen Hurts is dead last in America, 158th in America, of getting the ball out of his hands. He averages, on a pass play, 3.11 seconds to get it out of his hand. It's absurd. So people oftentimes want to point to the O-line and say, man, the pass pro sucks. No, the quarterback needs to get the ball out of his hands. And that's my biggest knock on Jalen Hurts. I don't think he's an elite quarterback throwing the football. He's definitely a dynamic player. With those running backs, that rushing attack is dynamic. But with the 50th graded defense in the country and a quarterback that doesn't get the ball out of his hands and throw the ball efficiently, there's a lot of weakness in Norman, Oklahoma. Now that brings me to the weakest of the undefeateds is Clemson. 64 missed tackles on the year, the most amongst undefeated teams. They're on pace for about 140 missed tackles this year, but maybe 150. What they really have is they have decent pass pro. They have the best receiver in the country in T. Higgins. They have a running back who should be doing a lot better than he is. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's 57th graded running back in the country, Travis Etienne. Who would have thought that? 21st in the NCAA and at 7 yards a carry. He's 86th in the country in explosive rushing yards. So what is Clemson? Clemson has a great receiver, an underperforming quarterback, and a defense that lost a lot and can't tackle. We're talking about they're the number two team in the country?
It's hard to win national championships with that formula.
Stop it. Stop it. They are not. So that's my opinion. After watching the film, really going through the analytics, that's the national landscape that is college football right now. I think LSU's real. Alabama's real. Oklahoma has flaws. Clemson has more flaws. Ohio State is real. And then Penn State or Wisconsin, one of them's real. I think that's it. That's what we're dealing with here. You could talk about all these other one-loss teams. I think those are the teams that we're looking at the end of the year. Well, that's going to wrap up this episode, episode 37 of Menace to Society. Crazy, 37 episodes. We're really humping it, almost at 1 million downloads. That'll happen here probably in the next couple episodes. So really fired up about the platform. Appreciate everyone that has reached out, expressing interest to join the movement, the platform. We have read all submissions thus far, and we will probably be reaching out in the next week or two. So if you are interested and haven't reached out yet, please do so at Zach, Z-A-C-H, at menacetosocietypodcast.com. Also, if you're interested in advertising or sponsorship, we have crazy downloads, crazy listens. It'd really be good bang for your buck if you're interested in advertising. We have a bunch of national sponsors right now, looking for also regional sponsors and even local sponsors to Columbus, a major market here in Columbus, Ohio. Anyways, reach out, sponsorship at Menace to Society Podcast. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you were entertained. Hope you were educated, learned something, took something from it, or just enjoyed listening. And as we say, if you didn't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my ass.